Now to Indonesia, where the resignation of Central Bank Governor Peri Warjio, announced on the 27th of July, has highlighted concerns about the Indonesian economy under President Prabowo. After a career of 40 years at Bank Indonesia, the departure of the governor, who was appointed back in 2018, was announced by the government citing personal reasons, but there was no appearance by or even a statement from Warjio himself. Arianto Patunru is an economist at the ANU Indonesia Project and editor of the Bulletin of Indonesian Economic Studies, and I'm very pleased to say he joins us now on Sunday Extra. Welcome, Arianto.
Hi, Julian. Thank you for having me.
It's a great pleasure. Could you put the resignation of Governor Peri Warjio into context for us, please?
Yes, as you said, it is an unexpected resignation. So the nature of this resignation creates uncertainty about Bank Indonesia's independence and policy continuity. Why is that? Bank Indonesia was a bit late in responding to the inflationary pressure this year, and people were wondering why Bank Indonesia has not increased the policy rate. But then when they did in May and June this year, they did it three times, 50 basis points in May and two increases in June, each with 25 basis points. People start to think that maybe Bank Indonesia started to gain its independence, right? And then we heard the news that Peri resigned and it was unexpected. So it creates uncertainty. Even though Peri officially resigned for personal reasons, that's what he said, his departure before completing his term invites questions about whether the central bank was facing political pressure to support short-term objectives of the government, including faster growth.
And there have also been recent changes to the legislation that governs Bank Indonesia. Is that correct?
That's right.
Could you tell us about those?
Yes, there is new legislation that makes some adjustment. Some of the points that are concerning, especially to the market players, is that there seems to be some weakening of Bank Indonesia's independence. For example, now they allow a representative from the government to sit in the Board of Governors meeting, and that is unusual. And also, in the latest development, they are allowing another entity, which is Danantara, an investment agency, to also sit in a meeting of KKSK, a Committee for Financial Safety. And that is also concerning because it creates a potential conflict of interest, because Danantara may own banks, finance projects, they can issue debts or hold assets, which are, of course, affected by KKSK decisions. So that's concerning.
So quite a range of concerns about the role of Bank Indonesia under Prabowo. Arianto, I wonder if you could give us a bit of a sense of how significant a figure Governor Peri Warjio has been in the recent era of economic credibility within Indonesia.
Actually, he had done a good job as central bank governor, I think. He led the monetary authority during the very fragile time of pandemic. And also after that, there was inflationary pressure thanks to the tension in the Russia invasion in Ukraine. So under his leadership, those times, we could navigate the macroeconomic dynamics quite well. Of course, he was also very influential in pushing for Indonesia's electronic payment, and also he's successful in issuing Bank Indonesia certificate. So he has been successful in those fronts. But then the market could see also that he was quite dominated, if you like, by fiscal authority beginning this year, when the new Minister of Finance tried to shift finance funding in Bank Indonesia to state-owned banks with a condition that Bank Indonesia should not attempt to neutralize that changes in the economy. So that gives an impression that Bank Indonesia was losing its independence to some scale. But when he finally increased the policy rate 3 times in May and in June, we thought that, okay, maybe now under his leadership, Bank Indonesia regained its independence. Then we had this news about his resignation.
So then it all came to a very quick end. On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with economist at the ANU Indonesia Project, Arianto Patunru, about the changes at the head of the Central Bank of Indonesia and broader changes and concerns about the performance of the Indonesian economy under President Prabowo. And let's move to those, Arianto, because you've written about some of the key features that have characterized the recovery of the Indonesian economy after the 1998 Asian financial crisis, and a respected central bank is one of those. I wonder if you could outline what the other aspects of that recovery has been to set the scene, if you like, for what's changed under Prabowo.
Yeah, of course, we can start with Prabowo's growth ambitions, right? Because Indonesia's ambition to raise economic growth above its longstanding rate of around 5% is very legitimate.
So he wants to increase it to?
To 8%.
To 8%, yeah, by 2029.
Right. But targets alone cannot generate growth, of course. And faster expansion requires stronger investment, higher productivity, more competitive industries, and deeper global integration. And at the same time, the traditional engines of growth are increasingly constrained. We can see that household consumption cannot accelerate indefinitely. Fiscal space is narrowing, and Indonesia remains less integrated into international trade than several regional peers. And Indonesia has yet to develop a reliable new growth engine. For example, you can see that manufacturing share of GDP has stagnated. Much of the expanding service sector remains informal and in low productivity. And agricultural productivity has improved too slowly. And in addition to all this, we are losing macroeconomic credibility because of the situation that I just explained, right? But macroeconomic credibility is very important. It is itself an economic asset. Predictable rules, fiscal transparency, moderate debt, flexible exchange rate, sound banking system, all these are nature of macroeconomic credibility, and we own it the hard way after the Asian financial crisis. We could navigate the next crisis, like global financial crisis, taper tantrum 2013, quite well. And also, of course, as I mentioned before, COVID pandemic and Ukraine tension, all that we could navigate quite well. But now, because of the recent dynamics where market can see that there is a quasi-fiscal activities when a fiscal authority tried to overpower monetary authority, there seems to be a blurred line between all these institutions that creates some dent in this macroeconomic credibility. And I think that's dangerous because market would see that Indonesia might not be as credible, the rules are not as predictable, and things like that, and they might just move their money away from Indonesia, or they cancel their decision to park their money in Indonesia.
In terms of this sense of declining economic credibility, how significant a factor have things like the Prabowo administration's spending on the free school meal program and other spending initiatives been?
Yeah, that's part of it. Because as we know, he has all these flagship programs. You mentioned the free nutritious meals program, and then there is this red and white cooperatives initiatives. And of course, Antara, that I already mentioned, all this requires a big chunk of money. And then we also understand that the fiscal is very thin, tax revenue is very low, and while debt is still moderate, but the surface of debt keeps increasing. So fiscal space is really tight, right? And then we relate this with macroeconomic credibility. And I would say that we are not at the brink of an imminent crisis, of course. But the problem is something like institutional complacency, increasingly ambitious spending commitments, as I said, thin government revenue, and development financing that shifted outside the state budget through Danantara, for example, may slowly weaken confidence in Indonesia's macroeconomic framework. Yes, on the paper, we might show that the deficit as a percentage of GDP is still below 3% as mandated by the law. But because of some of budgetary items, it is not seen on the paper, but the risk is still there. And the market understands this. They don't just read the state budget, but if they understand that there are some off budget items of which some of the risk may appear, that will also be taken into account in investment decision.
Arianto, you've mentioned a few times Danantara, which I understand is Indonesia's new sovereign wealth fund, introduced, I think, in February of 2025. Could you please just explain for us a little bit more exactly what Danantara is and how central it is to Prabowo's policies and the impact that it's having?
Yeah, so Danantara, as you said, it is supposed to be a sovereign wealth fund. But what people understand of sovereign wealth fund, usually an SWF is a vehicle to channel some surplus fund. For example, surplus from export in Saudi Arabia's oil or in Norway's, right? Now, when it comes to Danantara, it is called a sovereign wealth fund, but it's quite different because Indonesia does not have surplus fund. So it will task Danantara to find money, investment. So in a way, it is quite different from what we understand about sovereign wealth fund. That's number one. Number two, it is also tasked to become a super holding of all the SOEs, state-owned enterprises. So it has two mandates as a sovereign wealth fund, even though the definition is different, and also as a super holding that manages or super group of all the SOEs. Now, increasingly, we can see that it can also be perceived as an arm of fiscal authority because it is given mandate to get investment, but also it is allowed to issue debt by itself, which is not written in the state budget. As I mentioned before, it's an off budget, and that creates a problem, at least in the perception of the market.
How much of an impact has the war in Iran and the closure of the Strait of Hormuz had on the Indonesian economy and all these other factors that you've been referring to?
Yeah, as a first order effect, it's not that much because our reliance in terms of crude oil from that location is not that high because we also import from other places, including Singapore, who has very large reservation. But of course, it can come as a second order effect because some other commodities and goods, the prices depend on crude oil price, of course. So it might come to Indonesia as a second order effect in terms of imported inflation, but probably the more direct effect comes from commodities like fertilizer, right? Because that one, Indonesia import a lot from the Middle East. So basically, Indonesia still needs to prepare for the worst. And I think the government has already anticipated this by doing some coordination with other countries in the region, including Malaysia and Singapore. But to answer your question, maybe not that big, but still we need to anticipate inflation, including through the rise of food inflation, but also when it comes to fuel, because Indonesia has been subsidizing fuel consumption. Of course, the increase in the price of the non-subsidized might create some dynamics because people who use the non-subsidized, when the increase is too much for them, they will switch to the subsidized one, meaning the supply of the subsidized fuel might be very limited, creates long queue and things like that. So the government needs to anticipate that too.
And just finally, coming back to the governorship of Bank Indonesia. We know that Peri Wajio has resigned. Who takes over, Arianto?
Yeah, at the moment, it's the deputy, Ibu Destri Damayanti. But for the official one, I think it will take some time because it has to go through the parliamentary process and things like that. So the market is still waiting. We hope that the permanent replacement can restore confidence. But if it comes to someone that is perceived by the market as being too close with the government,
like perhaps a relative of President Prabowo recently appointed to the board,
relative of President Prabowo, for example, that is a bad sign.
Right. Okay, well, watch this space. Arianto Patunru, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
My pleasure, Julian.
And Arianto is an economist at the ANU Indonesia Project and editor of the Bulletin of Indonesian Economic Studies.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.